skies for amber waves of green, for purple mountains.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And right now we have with us on the line Mike Corbett and Sam Giancotto, and we're going to be talking about a book called Double Deal, The Inside Story of Murder, Unbridled Corruption, and the Cop Who Was a Mobster. Let's see, who do we have? Where is Michael and where is Sam? What is Michael? Are you there?
I'm here.
All right, fine. And Sam, are you there?
I sure am.
And of course, you're the godson of Sam Giancotto, the former the head of the mafia here in the United States.
Yes, I am. I had that distinction of having to carry that name for many, many years, and living under that stigma, as well as under that cloak of crime.
Well, of course, we've read your other book called Double Cross, and that is a great, great, great book, and I certainly commend you for it.
Thank you.
And this is a great book as well.
Thank you.
So this is the story of a young Irish boy raised in the streets of Chicago. Of course, his name was Mike Corbett, who's with us today. And, of course, he eventually got into a life of crime, and he even became a police officer working for the mob. Why don't you tell your story, Mike? At least start off with it.
I started out in high school working for a company in Chicago that was an electric motor company that was really a front for a slot machine video company for the mob. I started working for them and worked on a lot of their different projects, became friendly with the owners, and at one point I needed to move on, and they put me in a gas station that they owned the property, and I opened the gas station and started running the gas station.
But of course you knew that this was really a mob operation.
Well, I didn't know initially, but after I was there a short period of time, it became very apparent.
And of course, Sam Giancotto was coming out on a regular basis and leaving his car there. And so you got to know Sam Giancotto. What sort of man was he?
I can only talk about how he was to me. He was always a gentleman, a very classy guy, very kind to me. We had a good rapport. He would come in and have conversations with me for an hour or so and just shoot the bull. And we became very close.
And, of course, as you point out in your book, though, when you're in this, and you called it not the mob but the outfit, why everybody's sort of using everybody else, and even the people you think are your best friends will turn on you and kill you without giving another thought?
Absolutely. That became very apparent later on.
And I think probably, Michael, you know, when you're living that life, and Mike spent 35 years in that life, that becomes kind of a known quantity, that if you step out of line or there's some problems, that there's that possibility that the people who are your best friends are the ones that are going to have you killed.
Yeah, but there's no pretenses. I mean, you know that going in. It's not something like it's a surprise. I mean, you know, just by being around, seeing how other people are treated, and I mean, when they tell you something, that's the way it is. You're responsible for your actions, and you know, that's just the way it is.
All right. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest, Mike Corbett, and, of course, Sam Giancotto, as we begin to develop this whole incredible, incredible story that's before us right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course our guest this afternoon is Mike Corbett and Sam Giancano. And Sam Giancano, of course, is the godson of the very, very famous mobster who was associated with so many of the things that were going on in this country. He was sharing a mistress with President Kennedy. It's an incredible, incredible story, but that's for another time.
Mm-hmm.
Under any circumstances, why Mike Corbett started out as a young man in Chicago, eventually got into the mob, and of course he began moving up with the mob. He actually was put into a position as a police officer in by Sam Giancano at a place called Willow Creek, and eventually became the police chief of Willow Creek, all the time working for the mob. And it, you know, at the time, of course, there was a lot of money to be made, and I'm sure this was one of the major motivations for it, wasn't it?
Absolutely. The town was called Willow Springs.
Willow Springs, okay.
And absolutely, I was put into this position because the gas station that I was operating on their property was going to be torn down for a parking lot. Sam came to me and said, you know, you want to be a policeman, which was the furthest thing from my mind. I then said, okay, after he convinced me that I'd be able to make a living and make some money there, which he did convince me. And I went out there, and I was a police officer there for over 20 years. And I was the youngest police chief in the state of Illinois. I was made chief of police at the age of 27 in 1973.
All right. Of course, so much of this, of course, everything was corruption. You made a lot of money by stopping cars and for speeding, and then instead of writing them a ticket, why, they gave you money. And of course, you know, I can remember back in the 1960s in Chicago, this sort of thing was going on, and you know, you got stopped by a police officer. Usually, people would pull out their wallet and give the police officer some money, and that was just sort of a way of life, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, but there were bigger and better things going on besides traffic violations.
Well, of course, one of the things you talk about in your book is the relationship between certainly the CIA and the mafia, and I think that that's one of the really important things that I want to talk about when we get back, because to the average American, the idea that our Central Intelligence Agency, or at least certain agents within the Central Intelligence Agency, would be actively working within the mafia. I mean, we might imagine an isolated police chief being corrupt, but certainly they were into Las Vegas, they were into the CIA, they were into big business all across the country, and of course they were simply one of the most powerful financial forces in America, and you were right on the edge of it. We'll be right back here with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest this afternoon, Mike Corbett, Sam Giancano. We're talking about their book, which they wrote together, called A Double Deal. And it's a fascinating, fascinating insight into the life of a young man who's the youngest police chief in the country. He's police chief at 27, and of course of Willow Springs, and of course all the time he's working for the mob. So why don't you pick up the story from there?
After I became chief of police, I was doing courier duties for the mob or for the crew or the outfit or whatever you want to talk. And we would travel to Las Vegas to pick up what was called the skim money that they were skimming off the casinos, transported back to Chicago. We would travel to South Florida to pick up the skim money that was coming out of the casinos that were operated out of the country. The guy that I worked for, one of the main guys that I worked for, was a guy named Hyman Larner, who was like a protege of Meyer Lansky's. And they were operating casinos in Iran, the Philippines, Panama, Costa Rica, and a lot of other places in South and Central America. And the money would be brought into the United States and without going through customs, because we had a pass. We never stopped for customs. We never got stopped by immigrations. We would bring plane loads of money into the United States, and then it would be dispersed amongst the different guys in the outfit. We did a lot of things. Took a lot of stuff out of the country. We were taking arms out of the country during the Iran-Contra situation. We were being offloaded in Panama. Some of these weapons were being then put onto Israeli military cargo planes flown into other parts of South and Central America. We were dealing with a lot of suits from the CIA. We were dealing with a lot of military people and plainclothes people from the Israeli Mossad, and it was very interesting work.
But of course, the CIA knew everything that was going on, and a lot of people in the DEA knew about it too, didn't they?
Absolutely. Mr. Lerner was classified by the DEA as a kingpin and was never approached or interrogated or investigated during his entire life.
Yeah, he really spent 50 years untouched.
Right. I don't think he ever went to prison or had a police officer ask him a question.
Matter of fact, in the last 10 years, there were three investigations formed, multi-agency investigations by the U.S. government, including the DEA, the IRS, the Treasury Department, the Department of Justice, FBI. And in each instance, each one of those investigations were stopped. And the most recent one in 1997 was just about to head to Panama to investigate the whole operation, and they were stopped by the State Department.
And I think what our listeners have to understand is that, there are a lot of people out there, certainly in law enforcement, are trying to do a good job in the FBI and the DEA, but at the very, very top, that's where the power is. And, of course, you start getting too close to the criminal element, and, many, many times, of course, these will be called back, just exactly as all of the investigations of the Islamic terrorists were stopped before 9/11. It was only after that they were allowed to go ahead and do their investigations. And they have to ask the question, why? Now, what about the CIA and the Mr. Giancano? There are some rumors that they were involved in his assassination. What is your thought on that?
Well, yeah, I think the important aspect is to trace the history of how the government has used different elements of society to do their bidding within the United States as well as outside the country. And outside the country, it's been pretty well documented that the CIA had hired Sam Giancana and his associates to attempt the assassination of Castro. They were involved with the CIA in Indonesia. And obviously the same thing with the Shah of Iran in the 1950s. So the CIA has been active in various places around the world, and in certain situations needed front men for them. And I think the American public has become more aware of that, and I think that's one of the really important messages. You mentioned about illusion. My interest in writing Michael's story was, sure, it's an interesting individual. He's larger than life. He's done a lot of things that nobody has done, but it's this hidden deception that we have within, that we live within, and my feeling is that we can't be apathetic citizens. We have to know what our government is doing, and if we accept that, then fine. It's just like what you were talking about with the prior to 9/11. We didn't have the kind of intelligence that should have been present because there were people not willing to go that direction.
And I think that's really so. It's important. Well, what about the murder of Sam Giancana? What's your take on that?
Well, Sam was really in a situation. He had come back from Mexico. He had lived in Mexico for a number of years. He was really in a situation where he was a man who knew too much. He knew a lot about what the government had been doing. He was participating in government activities. He had elements of organized crime, and I'll talk really about the Italian organized crime back then, who were concerned about whether he was going to be talking to the government. He was due to testify to the Senate committee 5 days prior to his murder.
That was a church committee, wasn't it?
Yes.
And of course, and they didn't know whether he might actually talk. And of course, they were investigating the connection between the mafia and the CIA. And I think there were some people in government who were very, very worried what he might say.
Absolutely. There was so much relating to Hollywood, to Las Vegas, to these overseas operations. And he was also, in the early 60s with Hyman Lerner, as Michael mentioned, they had really spread Chicago's gambling empire throughout the world, and they were obviously generating a lot of money, and this became a source of envy, and there were obviously people within organized crime that would like him gone. And we in Double Cross had mentioned that this was really kind of a conspiracy to move him out of the way so that High Lerner and some of these other people could take over the operation and continue, and that the government at the same time could silence Sam Giancana because he obviously knew too much.
All right, fine. Well, Chris, go ahead.
Let's set up his assassination. You have to understand that, as Sam said, he was scheduled to testify within days of his assassination. And he had at least three carloads of agents sitting on his home. Chicago intelligence, FBI intelligence, and what they call a suit squad, which they believed were CIA operatives that were all on surveillance of his home. A gunman got into his home and killed him in his basement, got out of his home and got away without any of these 8 to 12 people seeing him. We know, because of my involvement with other crews at the time, after the fact, who was involved in his shooting. He was later murdered with his brother in Chicago in a cornfield. The name of the shooter of Sam Giancana was Anthony Spilotro, whose life was portrayed in the movie Casino and the book Casino by, I think, Pileggi, Nicholas Pileggi. How does this happen? How did this happen, and how was nobody ever arrested for this murder? They never wanted anybody arrested for this murder. They didn't want this case solved.
Well, of course, the point that you bring out is that the mafia was involved in doing assassinations for the CIA and other countries, weren't they?
Absolutely.
Now, what about the Kennedy assassination? What part, because at one point you allude to the fact that they were unsuccessful in assassinating Fidel Castro, but they were successful with Kennedy. Wasn't this really another mafia, a foreign mafia group rather than the American mafia?
Well, I think
everybody's got an opinion. Sam, you can go ahead.
Yeah, and we talk about that certainly the mob did not have the presence and the capability to do that on their own, as some people purport. And from the information my father had told me, and that we put in the double cross, and what Michael heard through the grapevine as well, I had indicated that it was really, they played a junior role. They obviously wanted the Kennedys out of the way. Robert Kennedy had identified Sam Giancana as the top hoodlum in the country. They were trying to break organized crime. Jack Kennedy obviously had some enemies due to the Bay of Pigs and the debacle with that and the CIA problems he was having. So there were a lot of people who wanted him out of the way. And we talk about the fact that they played a junior role. My father had indicated that there were several shooters that were participated, the men that were brought in from Chicago, but that there were also intelligence rogues, and there were some foreign people brought in through Santos Traficante in Tampa. And so there were a number of different, I think, groups that combined efforts to make it happen, because certainly the mob didn't have the ability to suppress the media, to suppress the kind of investigations that should have took place.
Only the FBI and the CIA could have done it. They had to certainly have helped cover up the truth. In fact, we have a book written based upon the papers of the former head of the covert operations for the CIA, Mr. Robert Crowley, where he tells exactly the relationship between the CIA and the mafia. And Sam Giancana was approached, and he hated the Kennedys because he'd got Jack Kennedy elected, and then they betrayed him. That's really not a nice thing to do. But he wasn't going to go ahead and get involved in that himself. And at least according to this book, they actually referred this out to Italy, and the Italians said, "You don't think we're crazy?" And so they referred him to the people over in Marseille, and they were the ones, the so-called French connection that brought at least some of the shooters in.
Right.
Has you heard the same thing?
Very much that same kind of scenario. And
there were so many shooters in Dallas that day. It's lucky that 15 people weren't shot.
Right. I think that's absolutely right.
If you look back at the pictures that were taken of the guys behind the grassy knoll that they brought off of the railroad car, and identify those guys today, and which they didn't want to do at the time. I mean, you got Chuck Harrelson there, Woody Harrelson's father, mm-hmm. was one of the guys on that train. Mm-hmm. You've got, I think, Sam Chuck Nicoletti.
Mm-hmm.
Was Nicoletti in Dallas on that
yes.
day?
Yes.
I mean, you have a Chicago shooter, you have a Texas shooter, you got people from out of the country that were there as shooters, you got Lee Harvey Oswald, who we believe, and I believe, was a dupe. I don't believe he could get nothing from that bookstore. And they just worked their magic. Everybody kept their mouth shut, case closed, and nobody wanted to knock on the right doors. So here you have what you have.
Well, we'll be right back here with our two guests this afternoon. Well, let me tell you about some of the four tape sets we have. One special tape set is the Tuskegee Study, and it's four interviews with people who were involved with the Tuskegee Study, or at least who've gone into the background of this really most horrible of all American experimentation. We had the unique opportunity to interview a number of the men who were involved in analyzing the Tuskegee Study, a government-sponsored study where 400 black men were recruited, and they had syphilis, and of course, what they did not understand is that they were not being recruited to be treated, they were being recruited not to be treated, and the government agents did everything they could to block those men from receiving treatment for their syphilis. Call today at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's important that you understand that study so you can better understand the mentality of the men who are working behind the scenes in America today.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi. By the time you reach the retirement years, the average American will be taking 7 different prescription medications. Wouldn't it be nice to stay healthy and avoid taking all those pills? One unusual molecule has been shown to be effective in maintaining health, allicin, the active ingredient in fresh garlic. You won't find much allicin in regular store-bought garlic pills, but you will in Alimax, the only 100% pure allicin garlic extract now being imported from Britain. Call 866-405-4000 to learn more about Alimax. That's 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that this is a good time, I think, to give some serious consideration to being sure that if there was a disruption, as far as our water is concerned, you'd be able to get good, clean water. And we are carrying something now called the Big Berkey. It's the ultimate water filter. It's the most economic water filter you can buy. Ceramic filters can be re-cleaned up to 100 times or more. It's convenient. It sets up in minutes without the need for plumbing tools or electricity. It's powerful. The Big Berkey removes pathogens such as E. coli, cholera, and cryptosporidium, and reduces chlorine, herbicides, pesticides, foul taste, and odors. The Big Berkey is so powerful it can easily filter raw, untreated water from lakes and rivers. It's elegant. The high-grade polished stainless steel will complement your finest decor. It's flexible. You can take it any place you want to go. Ordinarily, these are $279, and you can get them from Radio Liberty for $239.95 plus $10 shipping. And, of course, if you buy it through us, why, you'll get either one of our four tape sets or one of the videos that I have actually produced. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask about the Big Berkey. Now, these are not available in California or in Iowa. However, there's something called the Berkey Light, which is another water filter. And there, of course, the studies have shown that it's very, very effective as far as the filters are concerned. It's not stainless steel. It's a clear plexiglass. And you can either get it and works just as well for $199 plus $10 shipping, or you could actually get it with lights on the bottom so that you constantly have light. If anything happened and lights went out, you would have a ready light supply. And of course, this is available simply by calling 1-800-544-8927. It's $199 without the lights. It's $159 with the lights. If you'd like more information, you can go up on our website or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's the Berkey Light, or anywhere across the country, you can get the Big Berkey just by giving us a call. And this is a good time to have something so that you, under any circumstances, you can always have fresh water. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, Mike Corbett, or Sam Giancano. And we're telling the story. Mike was, he was a professional criminal, and he was making lots of money. But, of course, the money wasn't bringing him all the happiness. He thought the money was going to bring in the happiness, but when it came right down to it, you were eventually convicted of a crime. What was the crime that you were convicted of, Mike?
I was convicted of racketeering, 2 different counts of racketeering and obstructing justice in 1987.
All right. Was that part of your job? I mean, because you were a police officer and they're working for
the law? The conspiracy. Part of the racketeering was a conspiracy to commit murder of a mob attorney's wife in Chicago, which we were acquitted of the murder, but we were found guilty of the rest of the conspiracy.
Well, now, of course, you wouldn't. You didn't really want to get involved in any murder, did you?
No, I was asked to do this, and after thinking it over for 2 days, I backed out of the murder. But if she was then murdered anyway, so it doesn't make any difference. I didn't go to the police. I didn't tell anybody she was going to be murdered. So I was right back in a conspiracy. If she'd got hit by a bus, I would have been charged with conspiracy.
All right, fine. Well, then, of course, how long did they send you to prison?
I got sentenced to 20 years, maximum sentence.
All right, and so how long did you serve?
I did my entire sentence. I did over 11 years and was paroled in 1998.
All right. Now, of course, at one time, the FBI came to you, and there was, by this time, there was a contract out on your life, wasn't there?
Initially, the day that I was indicted back in 1987, two agents, FBI agents, who were not friends of mine, they were associates of mine. I'd been a police officer for 20-some years, and I'd worked with them on a couple of cases. The same day that I was indicted, they called me, asked me to meet them. They had some information for me. So I met them, and they told me and showed me a transcript of a wiretap over here in which there were just two people on this over here, no names, and one of them was asking the other one, not asking him, telling him to kill me, putting a contract on my life. And the other guy was trying to cop a plea saying, that's a close friend of yours, he's your driver, he's this, he's been around. And the other guy said, kill him. That was it, case closed. So I told the agents, yeah, let me think about it, because I figured they were trying to do a job on me. They were trying to get me to flip on anybody I'd flip on, and good guy, good cop, bad cop.
And, of course, they were offering you the witness protection plan. They were offering you get off scot-free on your charges and pick up your life elsewhere. But, of course, then they actually played you a tape recorder.
I had refused all their overtures, and, you know, I'd been a loyal soldier and thought, you know, that's how I was going to go down. I was 40-some years old. I figured I could do my time. I'd get out. Everything would be fine. And I went to prison and didn't take any of their offers to testify or anything. After I was in prison for 6 or 7 years, several other agents came to the prison and had a meeting with me in which they played a tape. And on the tape, I heard the same conversation, only naturally I recognized the voices. And the voice of the guy wanting to kill me was my friend for 40 years, a guy by the name of Salvatore Bastone. And he was also the godfather, legitimate godfather of my son, Joey. Joey was born a Down syndrome child and was very special and close to me. I had 7 other children. And he, I wouldn't say he was like my favorite, but because of his problem, he spent a lot of time with me. So on this tape, the shooter, or the guy getting the contract, asked about my son. He said, you know, his son's always with him. What if he's with him? And Salvatore Bastone said, kill him too. And that was the end. That was it. Everything was over at that point. And then I started to plot how I was going to get even, and how I was going to, you know, make this right. And the book is part of this.
Well, of course, you know, sometimes getting even, you know, if you strike back the same way they would, and of course they think nothing at all about killing anybody. They would kill anybody that got in their way. Wouldn't that be the fair thing to say?
Absolutely,
yes.
And of course, there's really no honor among these people. I mean, they could be your best friend 40 years, this man's your friend, you're his driver, you know, and he's really not only willing to kill you, he's willing to kill your child. Of course, did the orders come down from above?
Yes. I believe the orders came. I think he was in a position where had he refused, he'd have been the next guy on the list. But he knows that, and I know that. It's just when it finally happens, and you're in a position where you think, listen, I'm sitting in here taking all this grief for these people and being loyal to them, and they want to kill me?
We're going to be right back here in just a moment with our special guest. Our 4-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this 4-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention a couple of the other things we have here that helps to keep us on the air. One of them, of course, is something called Miracle 2 Soap Products, and Miracle 2 Soap Products is a soap and a moisturizing soap and a lotion and a gel and a neutralizer, and we can't make any medical claims. I can tell you some people use the neutralizer to help their heartburn because it's just a very alkaline solution. I can tell you that a lot of the people give us amazing, glowing reports, and if I were to tell you some of them, in fact, I don't even believe them, but I know the people are honest, and they are just incredible stories about how these products have really helped them. And when I see them and they're healthy and I've looked at their medical records, I just don't know what to say other than the fact we can say nothing about the products other than the fact that they are excellent soap. And if you'd like to try them, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for the Miracle 2 soap products. And then, of course, we do carry the Phenopoly. Phenopoly is a board game. It's a fascinating game. It's sort of fun to play. It really is fun to play. It's played just like Monopoly. But in the process, you're learning how to spell phonetically, how to pronounce words phonetically, and, of course, how to read phonetically. And they've dumbed down our children very effectively in schools, and we suggest that if you have children in government schools, seriously consider getting a Phenopoly set. And the Phenopoly set, of course, will allow them to learn in about 16 hours to reprogram their minds, and then they can begin to read and spell phonetically. And they've taken children from the bottom, you know, 25% reading and gotten them up to the top 10% in 16 hours. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask about Phenopoly. Most of these programs are $300, $400, $500, $600, $800. This is $139.95, and we throw in a couple of books with it. It's Phenopoly, and give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. Well, there's Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Mike Corbett and, of course, Sam Giancano, and they've written a book called Double Deal. How can people get copies of your book, Mike or Sam?
It's available in all national bookstores, independent bookstores, as well as on the Internet, so it's available everywhere.
And it's a good book. It's a good read, and, you know, I think Mike is incredibly honest in this. You know, he was drawn into this whole thing by a desire to make money and really had no moral compunctions about what he did, other than he did have a sense that maybe you shouldn't be killing people. And, of course, he was always on the, you know, on the edge of this whole thing, but as time went by, of course, he was drawn in further and further, and it was extremely profitable, wasn't it, Mike?
It was very profitable, and from the police officer's standpoint, I actually thought that we did a good job for our community. We had no crime in our community. I came into a town that was crime-ridden, car thefts, burglaries, armed robberies, all kinds of disruptions in our business. And within several months, the town was cleaned up. You could leave your doors open, and we had a great town where I was at, and I contributed a lot of that to the outfit, telling everybody to stay out of that town because that's where I'm at. We don't want any steam out there. There's a lot of other important business going on out there. Leave the people alone, and that's how that operated.
Well, now,
he was certainly, you know, at that time paid a minimal police officer's, you know, wage, and so the attraction of making the side money, it became to a point where I think Michael was asked by the town's comptroller, how come you haven't cashed 6 months of your paychecks? I mean, he was making so much money, he was just leaving his paychecks uncashed.
I'd put them on my dresser and leave them there and forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
It was the furthest thing. That $180 bucks a week was the furthest thing from my mind.
You know, but eventually, you know, the money became bigger, and he had the houses and the big boat and the vacations, but you know, he was a kid who was born in a family, a Central Illinois family, a farm family. They were poor. I mean, believe it or not, he had to wear his sister's blouse to grammar school because it was hand-me-downs, and he had mostly sisters in front of him. So, you know, money became his demise, you know. I mean, like a lot of young kids nowadays that don't see any opportunity, you know, you kind of fall in with some guys, and Michael was a fighter, and he could handle himself pretty well. And the lure of the money really, you know, is overwhelming for a lot of people. And certainly in Michael's case, you know, it paid off for many, many years. But I thought it was a tremendous story. I think it was a story about every man, every person in the country who grows up thinking about how can they make good. And Michael he came to the fork in the road. And he decided to go in one direction when a lot of other people decide to go the other.
But, of course, then comes the day of reckoning when you suddenly realize that loyalty to these people means absolutely nothing. They would kill you. They would kill your son. And, of course, at that point, you're still in prison. And you could have gotten out at that time, and you decided not to?
Right. I could have. I then began cooperating. And, in essence, I did begin cooperating at that point. But I would not take anything from my cooperation. I have letters from U.S. attorneys all over the country, FBI agents, where I refused to take a break in my sentence because I didn't want to get out that way. Now I wanted to finish my sentence and come back and take care of business. The problem was is that when I got back, everybody was dead, or at least most of the people were dead that I wanted to get even with. So in the interim, while I was doing all of this thinking about how I was going to get even, I decided to make some notes and do some stuff to maybe write a book to let everybody know what happened. So then I finally was able, through an agent, to hook up with Sam, and Sam did the writing, I did the talking, and we've put together what I believe is a great book. And by the way, last week, after only four or five days on the market, we made the New York Times bestseller list. So other people think it's a good book also.
Well, I think it's a good book, and you know, for our Christian audience, I want to tell you the language here is a little strong. In fact, the language here is very, very strong.
Very strong.
But the message is, well, this is the way that the real world is that Mike was raised in, and a society of violence and people who thought very, very little about human life and
That's
had no
right.
moral foundation. And, you know, the best thing for you, Mike, is you stayed in jail till these guys were dead. Otherwise, you probably would have, done something that you'd regret, and you'd be back in prison again.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, he said probably the government saved his life by scooping him up and putting him in jail. But
when they took me off the street, they saved my life, because at that time, I was being stalked by probably one of the best killers Chicago had to offer at that time.
Well, now, why did they want to kill you?
They were afraid that if I got a big sentence, and I had the potential of getting 66 years in prison. And because they put all my crimes together, the potential became a lot less, and I was only eligible to get 20 years in prison. So they were still afraid that any kind of big sentence like that, and I would start to cooperate with the government.
And he knew so much.
It was all figured out even before I went to trial and was found guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were being judge, jury, and executioner before I had an opportunity to even defend myself. So their fear was that I was going to talk, which is their fear every time when they hit somebody in a situation like this.
Well, has the mob pretty well been taken care of now? Are they still operating across the country? Are they still operating in Vegas?
They're operating bigger and better than ever before, especially with all this terrorist stuff going on. There is absolutely no attention being paid to the major mob families in the major cities. They're operating with impunity. As long as they don't wear a turban they can get away with whatever they want to. If they got a turban and a little mustache, they're in trouble.
Mm-hmm. And I think, Michael, a lot of your information is also coming from a lot of the field guys, a lot of the agents that Michael has contact with who are recognizing the same thing, that there's such a priority put on the terrorist area that some of these other things are going untouched. And certainly, you know, I thought it was an interesting idea that Michael kind of was brought into a corrupt system already. He didn't create it. He wasn't the first bad cop. And I think when you start to see what crime does, and what gambling does, and money, it corrupts the political system, the judicial system, and the police system. And that same kind of corruption affects our national government. And I think it's important that the American public understand how things like this can occur, how the injustices can occur, because there's people getting paid off, there's people getting favors. It's just like this Hyman Lerner. I mean, there's no question he was an asset of the United States government. He was providing intelligence to various elements within our government, and maybe that was a good thing, but at the same time, we should be aware of it, because there's terrible repercussions, because our government dances with the devil all the time, not just with organized crime. You know, they help create the Shah, they help create Marcos, Noriega, they work with the Taliban, they help create Saddam Hussein. And ultimately, these things have all come back to haunt us.
I think
every
we call that blowback.
Every one of them?
Yes.
Every one of them is our... We created every one of those people that he mentioned. Every single one of them, we propped up, we made who they were.
And I think that's what the American people really don't know. And you know, one of the things that what you brought out in your book, you know, that the mafia is pretty smart people. I mean, they're street smart. And, of course, they exploit what people want. People want prostitution. People want gambling. People want pornography. People want all of the things that they, and they provide them for them. And, of course, by making them illegal, why they, of course, are much more profitable. But the thing is that what we need are better people who do not want to be in all of these things, and there wouldn't be the demand. They are simply providing what the people want, and what a country turns away from God as we have, are we surprised at all that we have a corrupt society, and then of course it simply breeds the criminals that we're talking about today?
Well, supply and demand. You're absolutely right. If there wasn't demand, these guys would go and do something else.
And of course, I mean, a lot of these people are really into a lot of very legitimate businesses as well. After they made all their ill-gotten money, aren't they?
Absolutely.
That's the whole name of the game, is to take that money and push it into legitimate businesses where they can account for it. Because Michael even mentioned in Double Deal that he had so much cash in his drop-down ceiling, he could push any panel up and there'd be stacks of $100 bills. He couldn't spend it because, you know, he was under a 10-year IRS, you know, investigation. So what happens is these guys got to push the money someplace. And there's so much of it that you can understand how politicians, how judges, how they can get corrupted. I mean, Michael, the day he was picked up on his indictment, delivered $35,000 to one of the local aldermen, and that was his monthly little envelope he got.
$35,000 for a local alderman, oh my goodness. You know, that's pretty good pay. That's more than he'd get paid, you know.
He was getting that or more every month.
Right. And now, what about Las Vegas? Is Las Vegas still involved? You talked about how the mafia got the union pension funds to build the Flamingo and a lot of the big places in Las Vegas. What about today?
Well, you know, you have to understand, I've been away from it for 10 years. But just from what I hear and what I know is going out at the time that I went away, all they've done is change their mode of operation. Same things are still going on. Same people are still in charge. The same people are moving money, but they're just doing it differently. And it's Las Vegas is not a family town. I don't care what the mayor out there tries to tell everybody. Las Vegas is still a rough, tumbling Western town. Mm-hmm. And whatever, and the same things are going on out there now that were going on back there in the 70s and the 80s.
But of course, in the 70s and 80s, where they were working hand in glove with the unions and their pension funds, weren't they?
They still are.
Yeah.
I don't think those big buildings get built.
Yeah, they're another $1 billion.
The pension fund gives them the money to build all those buildings.
But, Mike, at the very time that the men were on trial for skimming and taking money out of Las Vegas, trials that were happening in Kansas City and Chicago, Michael was literally carrying $1 million in cash through Salt Lake City on a commercial airline to pay people under the table. And this is right when they're having the very trial, you know, concerning
this. The biggest investigation ever of skimming in Las Vegas. I'm going into Las Vegas during that trial and bringing millions of dollars out to pay for the attorneys representing the people in the trials.
Well, yes, I thought one of the interesting things was the way they took care of everybody. You know, you just got started, they start giving you a little bit of money, and as time goes by, everybody's getting money. I mean, there's money paid to everybody, and that's how they buy their loyalty and their support.
That's right. And it's not even a point of buying the loyalty. Once they got you hooked, what are you going to do? Who are you going to tell? Once you're taking that money, who are you going to tell?
And of course, as you pointed out in your book, why these people would thought nothing at all about killing people. And they had all these people who were professional killers, and certainly they just offed them without a second thought.
Not even a second thought.
Yeah.
And then go to their funeral the next day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you know, as you mentioned before, you know, with all the glamour and all the glitz and the money, you pay a price. And I think Michael, you know, recognizes that. Not total redemption, but recognition that you know, he took the fork in the road, and he hurt a lot of people. He hurt his family. His parents were great people, and they had no idea what he was doing. I think they were crushed. Or your father had passed away, but your mother was crushed.
No, because the mother sort of suspected that, at least as I read the book, she was a pretty smart lady.
She was. She said I was going to jail before I ever went on the police department.
Right. I remember that.
She kept telling me that over and over. She kept telling me, just because you're wearing that uniform and that badge, you're still going to jail. I know you're going to jail. She was right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, you're trying at least the best you can now to expose what's going on. And what you're doing is really, I'm sure, is rather dangerous. It's not very popular with the mob. It's still there. And they don't like to have this sort of thing exposed.
No, they don't. It's very dangerous.
And matter of fact, Michael made some strong statements in the beginning of Double Deal about some people perhaps getting in trouble over this because he was going to name names. And there has been several people who've suddenly disappeared out of Chicago. There's people on the East Coast that are very concerned because he felt it important that, you know, he tell it like it is. And I think that's what was the beauty of the story, was not to sugarcoat it. I mean, we presented Michael with his flaws as well as his good characteristics, and not everybody is 100% good or bad.
Well, of course, Sam, you did a good job in writing the book.
Thank you.
Said earlier, I enjoyed your other book, Double Cross, which incidentally we still carry. I bought a good supply of them because I thought that was such an important book. And then, of course, the new book is Double Deal, which, of course, what happened to your father, Chuck Giancana?
My father passed away in 2001.
He did. Well,
yeah.
He had co-authored the book, Double
right.
Cross, with Sam.
Yeah, my father was Sam Giancana's brother, had been with him for about 40 years, and saw and heard a lot, and my father knew Michael, matter of fact, when Michael was kind of working up the ranks.
But your dad never was part of the mob, was he?
Absolutely, yeah, but my father worked in a little different capacity. He ran some of the businesses for my uncle, so he wasn't kind of a guy in a crew who was running around making stops and doing, you know, other kinds of business activities. He ran a couple enterprises for him, they were really kind of just fronts.
So were they legitimate enterprises? Or?
Well, I really a combination. I can't say that it was 100% legit. There was a hotel motel that he ran, and there was certainly an opportunity to push money through the cocktail lounge, through some of the occupancy rates. So it was fronted for many, many years by my father for my uncle, and ultimately it created such a problem for my father that he said that was enough, and he turned his back really on his brother. And in 1969, we changed our name just to try to escape the stigma. And fortunately for me, my parents kind of pushed me in a whole different direction. He said, don't ever get involved with these people, because once they have you, you know, your life is never your own. And I was fortunate enough to go down another road and get an education. But I find it a fascinating aspect of our society and a dark side of our society that people need to know about. It's just not the Italian mafia. There's other kinds of crime. There's other kinds of corruption that take place, and it's important for people to recognize it.
And I think one of the important reasons why everybody needs to read the book is he brings out very, very clearly that the CIA worked very, very closely with the mafia as far as bringing the drugs in and as far as killing people throughout the world. And they would use the mafia as assassins. What sort of morality does our government have when it does that? We're just about out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts for us?
Well, I really appreciate your time and giving us the opportunity to talk about these subjects because they're important things for people to know.
They certainly are. Well, Mike, thank you so very much for being with us. And I'm probably going to call your producer and try to get you one of our other programs. We do 5 hours of talk radio a day, and it's been a great hour. God bless you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this program. I hope you enjoyed it. I think this was really very, very revealing about the dark side that it's there. And it's there because, of course, we no longer are a Christian nation. Our 4-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this 4-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention a couple of other items that we have here. And of course, if you are concerned about what's going on, and I don't know if there's going to be any serious problems in America, but I really fear there may be. And so one of the things you certainly want to do is have a supply of water and of food and other items on hand. And the Ready Reserve people, they've been, of course, in the Ready Reserve food business, preparing dehydrated and freeze-dried food for many, many years. And they have a catalog, and it's not only got a list of the food, but all sorts of other things that you would need for emergency situations. So if you would like to get a free catalog, you just give us a call at 1-800-5-448-927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And if you get it back to us, why, we'll be sure that you get the items that you have requested. And they've really, we've used their products for a long time ourselves. I know my wife liked their date nuggets, and you can use those just in cooking ordinarily, but there's all sorts of other things there. It would be nice to have on hand if there were going to be some problems and disruption of our society. And, well, if you read what the other side says, and I have read it, and they are anticipating there's going to be some very, very real problems coming in the very, very near future. So remember, it's Ready Reserve Foods. Give us a call at 1-800-5-448-927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. I mentioned a book that was based upon the papers of Mr. Robert Crowley, who was Deputy Director of Covert Operations for the CIA, going into the background of why the CIA killed Kennedy, how they killed Kennedy, and how they rationalized what they did. And, of course, Mr. Crowley turned these papers over with the proviso they would not be read until he was dead. And it is certainly, I think, a very accurate description of what happened. You're not hearing about it because, of course, they would want the American people to know that the CIA killed an American president and got away with it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and the book we're talking about is called Regicide. It's Regicide, and we have a good supply of them. If you're interested in getting one, it's 1-800-5-448-927. It's written by Mr. Gregory Douglas, who's a friend of ours. We've done a number of interviews with him, and a fascinating, fascinating guest. We'll get him on here in the not-too-distant future. But Regicide is must-reading to understand how our Central Intelligence Agency works, and of course the total lack of morality and integrity in these organizations. And of course that's why they can work so readily with the mafia. because there's not a great deal of difference between them. We have a four-tape set on the FBI. We have a four-tape set on the Kennedy assassination. We have a special. We call it the intelligence special, and it actually, of course, has a number of interviews with people within the FBI and have worked for the FBI. But if you'd like, of course, to substitute one of the books that's there, why, of course, you can always substitute the book and get that book redesigned with our intelligence special. So you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR if you'd like more information. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to get it to you. And, of course, our latest newsletter goes into this small group of people known as the Project for the New American Century, people like Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Mr. Armitage, Richard Pearl, Paul Wolfowitz, number two man of the Defense Department. All of them were part of a small group that were plotting the overthrow of Saddam Hussein back in 1997. And, of course, the whole purpose is an American empire, a one-world government under their control. America will rule the world. And we've simply taken their writings, their information. You can pull it down off the net at www.newamericancentury.org, or you can get the transcript of Ted Koppel's excellent program last week. It was the 5th of March, his Nightline program, where he actually interviews the chairman of this group, Mr. William Crystal, who readily admits that there's going to be we're going to replace the governments in Iran and Saudi Arabia. We're opening up to a series of wars, and when we do, there's going to be disruptions here at home. But then what would you expect when a country has turned its back on God? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we certainly hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, trying to make people understand we're involved in an epic struggle for the survival of Christian civilization, and most people don't even understand what's going on today. They don't understand why we have all the problems we have, but this has happened time and again throughout history. When a nation has repudiated God, as we have, and the official policy of our Supreme Court is, we cannot mention God in any public institution. We cannot pray in any public institution. And when, of course, a country turns against God, God turns against that country. And remember those words of Thomas Jefferson, "I tremble for my country, but when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever." And so if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'll be glad to get that for you as well. Please tell other people about our programs. Tell other people about our website at radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com, where, of course, you can listen to our live programs 3 hours a day. And then, of course, there are links to the American Freedom Network, where you can listen to our programs on a regular basis. And then, of course, there's you can learn how to get onto Genesis and get that program as well, if you don't already get it on shortwave. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will pray for America, pray for our boys, pray for our leaders. Please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Pray for our boys going into battle and for the civilians over there as well. Until tomorrow, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.
Well, what I could hear of it.
Why, who are all the calls?
Everybody, because you weren't on shortwave.
I wasn't on shortwave?
No. Because?